Okay, good morning. Welcome. It is 9 a.m. We're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. This is the September 16th, 2025 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission. Yes, if everyone could unmute their microphones, we'll call roll. Thank you.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Viacana?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Avila?
Here.
And Chair Shaw?
Here. Okay, and if we can all stand for the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I'm going to open this up right now for public comment. This is for items that are not listed on the agenda. And we have no speaker slips. I see no one coming forward, so I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. And then we are going to go to the planning staff and commission updates, please.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners. Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. I'm filling in for Eric Hughes today on the dais. He's going to be in the pit presenting. What I'd like to do, because this is a special meeting, we're not going to do a full staff update, but we will provide you a preview of your next meeting scheduled the 25th, next Thursday. So Eric Hughes, would you like to provide an update?
Thank you, Eric Hughes, current Planning Division Manager. Here to provide an update for the next scheduled meeting, September 25th. There are, I think, five items that day. Four of them are going to be cell sites, so we're going to call it cell site day. The first is a request by Cornelius Whitehead for a development plan, coastal development permit, CDRC 2024-00027, for a new wireless facility at 400 Monte Cristo Place near Cambria. This is the project that was continued, so that will be heard on the 25th. The next is a request by Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit, NDRC 2023-00048, for the construction and operation of a 48-foot tall faux mono eucalyptus wire facility. The project is located in the rural lands land use category at 15435 Moro Road, approximately 1 mile west of the city of Atascadero. The third is a hearing to consider a request by Robert Soto and Verizon Wireless for a conditional use permit, NDRC 2023-00049, for an unmanned wireless communication facility designed as a 45-foot tall water tank. The project is located in the agricultural land use category, located at 8610 Green Valley Road, approximately 12 miles east of the community of Cambria. The fourth item is a request by Verizon Wireless for a development plan coastal development permit, NDRC 2023-00053, for the construction and operation of a 55-foot tall faux mono eucalyptus wireless facility. The project is located in the commercial service land use category at 1155 Los Olivos Avenue in the community of Los Osos, right behind the grocery outlet. And then the last item is a consideration of an amendment to the general plan safety element, LRP 2024-00010, to update implementation measures for fire prevention in state responsibility areas and very high fire hazard severity zones, as required by Senate Bill 1241. Also an update implementation measures for access points, as required by Senate Bill 99. Additionally, incorporate by reference the San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdictional Hazard Mitigation Plan for disaster recovery funding eligibility per Assembly Bill 2140. And lastly, to incorporate the exception provision for dead-end road requirements. That concludes staff's presentation, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Does anyone have questions? Okay, then do any of the commissioners have updates? Okay, I don't see any. Then let's see. We are going to, we have public comment. Okay, we're gonna open public comment. No one? Okay, close it. All right, we're gonna move into a hearing, our one hearing today. to consider a request by NKT Development, and I am going to have Mr. Hughes introduce this. Thank you.
Actually, I think Mr. LaRue will introduce
us. Okay, go for it.
Mark LaRue, Planning and Building. So presenting today will be Cheryl Koo, Planning Supervisor, with support from Eric Hughes, current Planning Manager, and also Emily Creel, SWC Consultant. She has been an integral part of the team. She is under the weather today, but is joining us remotely. So she will be listening in and available via Teams if we have questions or if she needs to provide any additional information. So she will be raising her hand if she wishes to speak. And with that, I'll hand it off to Cheryl. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LaRue. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Cheryl Koo. The item before you is the Dana Reserve Specific Plan Amendment. And this is a request by Dana Reserve LLC and NKT Development to amend the Dana Reserve Specific Plan, the vesting tentative tract map, the conditional use permit for oak tree removal and grading impervious surface area, as well as the development agreement. This project is located in South County within the community of Napomo. This time it's a 288 approximately acre undeveloped parcel. It's surrounded by existing residential suburban development and bordered by Highway 101. The timeline for this project begins in June of 2020. That's when the original application for the Dana Reserve Specific Plan was submitted. After multiple community workshops and scoping meetings, a final EIR was posted in August of 2023. And then the Planning Commission ultimately made a recommendation on the project in October of 2023. In April of 2024, the Board of Supervisors voted to approve the project. And subsequently, the LAFCO annexation to bring the property into the Napomo CSD territory happened in November of 2024. Following the board's approval of the project, a lawsuit was filed by the Napomo Action Committee and the California Native Plant Society against the applicants, the county, and NCSD. And then after subsequent LAFCO approval, a second lawsuit was also filed. Both of those lawsuits are currently stayed, and a settlement agreement was reached in April of 2024. The settlement agreement required the applicants to submit an amended application to the County Planning Department to modify the project's entitlements and called for specific changes to what was approved. That application was submitted in April, and that is the changes we are looking at today. What you see here is a conceptual plan that has been modified to show the changes, and some of the larger changes are called out here. Overall, the change to the project is a reduction of total dwelling units by 128 dwelling units. In addition, we are also eliminating the requirement that 100 accessory dwelling units be built with the initial construction of the project. There's no prohibition on accessory dwelling units. They just wouldn't be built at initial construction. The largest area where there's a visible change is up in the upper right or northeast corner. This used to be what was called Neighborhood 10A, and it was one of the affordable, de-restricted multifamily neighborhoods. That neighborhood has been removed. A few of the units, six to be exact, have been relocated into the other multifamily affordable neighborhood located in the center of the project. In total, there were 78 units removed, and we do have a total of 78 affordable de-restricted units that will remain with the project. They're all proposed to be located in this middle neighborhood. The removal of that neighborhood resulted in 3 acres of oak woodlands being retained. The next change is within neighborhoods 1 and 2. These are the multifamily neighborhoods. They contain some affordable by design housing at the moderate income level. And there's some relocation of units between neighborhoods 1 and 2, but a total reduction between the two of 38 units. And then in neighborhood 9 up in the upper left or northwest corner. A few lots have been removed from neighborhood 9. The purpose of that is to increase the buffer between the existing neighbors and the edge of that neighborhood. It also resulted in preservation of additional oak woodlands and Burton Mesa chaparral. Neighborhood 7 is along the southern property line, and there's a reduction of 8 lots in this neighborhood. The result of that is preservation of existing manzanita. And finally, within neighborhood 3, there's a reduced setback and a requirement for single-story structures in the first 2 lots here along this property line. Purpose of that was to mitigate some neighborhood view concerns. Well, there's a lot of interest in the units that are being removed and that are still being proposed and those income levels. So what you have here are 2 tables. Table 1 is the approved Dano Reserve Specific Plan, Affordable Housing Plan, and it is broken down by the income levels of the units. So there were 78 units proposed to be built in the very low income category, 128 in the low income category, 242 in the moderate income category, and in the above moderate category, 1,022. In parentheses, those numbers are the amount of above moderate that would qualify as workforce housing. So there's units in neighborhoods 1 and 2 that are designated that way. And then table 2 is the proposed 2025 Dano Reserve Specific Plan Affordable Housing Plan. So you can see the project still proposes to provide 39 very low-income units, 39 low-income units, 139 moderate-income units. Those would be within neighborhoods 1 and 2. And then 922 above moderate units, and 173 of those would be workforce housing. We always get questions about our RENA progress, so we have this data here for you. This is the table. The numbers on the bottom show the proposed 2025 contributions to RENA progress, and the number above is the 2024 contributions. These numbers below are what was presented to the board most recently, I believe in April of this year. So what you're seeing is the required regional housing needs allocation numbers for the various income levels between the time period of 2019 and 2028, and then the permits that were issued between 2019 and 2024, the unmet RENA need, and then in the green is the units that were provided previously, the units that were provided are proposed to be provided now. And we have broken it down into percentages, so you can see where those units to be constructed in this time period. It gives you some idea of what percentage in those various income levels this project would be providing. The California Environmental Quality Act was performed for this addendum, for this amendment, and an addendum was prepared to the certified 2024 final EIR to evaluate the proposed changes. Each of the changes contributes to a reduction in the extent of development that would be allowed under the specific plan. And that addendum documents none of the conditions described in section 15162, which call for preparation of the subsequent EIR, have occurred. With that, the staff recommendation to the Planning Commission is that you would recommend to the Board of Supervisors to find the previously certified 2024 Final Environmental Impact Report adequate for the purpose of compliance with CEQA in accordance with the prepared addendum, and approve LRP 2025-0004, AMEND 2025-0003 for amendments to the 2024 Dano Reserve Specific Plan, Conditional Use Permit, Investing to Track Map Development Agreement based on the findings in Attachment 1 and in accordance with the recommended modifications in Attachment 2. We'll conclude the staff presentation. We have the county team as well as the applicant team all available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that thorough report. Do we have questions? Okay, I am seeing no questions. Then, okay, sorry, I expected questions. Then I guess we will go to opening public comment. Or do we have the applicant? Do they want to make a presentation first? Okay. All right. Do we have speaker slips?
We have one request to speak from Ken Trigero with People's Self-Help Housing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the Commission. Ken Trigero from People's Self-Help Housing. You know, just to make sure everyone knows what we do, we're a nonprofit. Born right here, 1970, been doing this for 55 years, developing affordable housing, that is, and had a lot of great successes, about 3,500 units or so over the years. We're doing a lot. It's really going well in a lot of cases, but there is so much more that needs to be done. We always want to try to talk about in front of our decision makers like yourself, our wait list right now. It's for this county. It's around 9,000 households for about 1,000 units that we have, and that's just us. I know there's others that are doing the same work. So this is a great way to do more affordable housing. That is working with the market rate developers. We've done several of these kind of relationships. So we're excited. I mean, we're disappointed that there was a reduction of the affordable component, but we're so grateful to the Tompkins family for keeping the opportunity for 78 units to go forward. Assuming you will approve this, we'll continue to work with the Lucia Mar Unified School District to develop that site for their teachers, their classified employees. Those can be available to other members of the public. They're just going to be within this income restriction of that flows through a 55-year deed restriction on that land once it moves over. And also, we're excited to continue to work, assuming this gets approved and moves forward, with the Community Foundation on the down payment assistance program that the family is generously contributing toward. We'll work with the foundation to actually administer that program. We're also a certified, we're a nonprofit lender, and so we'll be administering that program. So we, you know, really want to encourage you to move this along. Time is really our enemy in terms of fighting this affordable housing crisis. So hopefully this will move forward. We encourage you to move it along. Thanks. I'm here for questions too.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have other speaker slips?
No additional requests to speak, but if there's any member of the public that wishes to speak on this item, please come forward.
Okay, seeing no one coming forward, I'm going to close public comment. Before we go into deliberations, if each of the commissioners would like to disclose any ex parte communication for this item, that would be great. If we could start this way.
Good morning. As far as communications, on August 10th, 2025, I met with Mr. Tompkins for an on-site tour of the Dana Reserve project. And on September 12th, 2025, met with Mr. Tompkins and Jocelyn Brennan again to discuss the project. Thank you.
Yes, I met last week with the applicant and his agent at the site just to do a site visit and discuss the changes that were being made.
And last Friday, I did a Zoom with Mr. Tompkins and Jocelyn Brennan just regarding the changes that were the staff went through today.
I, too, met with the applicant and the applicant's agent yesterday, and I met by phone with Herb Kandel on Saturday.
I met last week and did a site tour with the applicant as well.
Okay. Let's see. Then we are going, I'll go into deliberations. Would anyone like to speak first or make a motion, or I'm open to whatever? I see a microphone.
I do have a few questions. I thought we might have an applicant presentation, so I didn't put those out right away. Now that we've heard from the public, a couple of things have come up in conversations and thinking about opportunities here. And we've seen in a letter that we received yesterday from a member of the public a question about grading and dust control. And so I did have a question about that then. She was requesting some kind of screening And we do have a project here with something of 20 class one unmitigable impacts, and air pollution and air quality are amongst those. And so could you explain, are we meeting that request that we received yesterday about fencing and screening? The request was even for 6 or 8 foot high screening. Are we already doing that, or is there a way we could?
Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. So I was, I did get that request. It was along Neighborhood 3, the homeowners there. And just looking at our mitigation measures, while it doesn't specifically call out the exact measures, the applicant is required to come up with a construction activity management plan and a dust control plan that would be reviewed by the Air Pollution Control District, who has essentially authority over, you know, dust control in the county. And so they would be required to implement, you know, the applicable measures to reduce dust and keep, you know, dust from going off site that would affect these neighbors. But specifically, I didn't see anything that called out, you know, 8 to 10, you know, the fencing requirement. But again, they would be required to implement, you know, the various dust mitigation measures to reduce, you know, the impacts there.
This is David Graham, Public Works. I can add to that a little bit. So in addition to the documents that Mr. Hughes mentioned, you know, dust starts, you know, on the ground. And so it's, you know, the whole purpose is to prevent it from even getting stirred up in the first place. So it really begins with the stormwater pollution prevention plan, which is required with any kind of construction activity over 1 acre. And that's where, you know, we require watering and tackifiers to keep the dust down from even getting stirred up in the first place. So that's required with all development, and will certainly be required here, and will also be, I'm sure, looked at by the APCD as well as Public Works. As far as the fencing itself, 8 to 12 feet of fence, you know, I don't think fencing itself is going to be effective for that concern. The effective approach is to keep the dust down in the first place. So that's what we're going to do. And then there will be fencing, construction fencing, but that's more of like a erosion control, you know. So there will be silt fences and then construction fencing around the perimeter, but that's really for erosion, not for windborne dust. Fencing is not really effective in that, for that application. So, but we're going to start from the ground up.
Right. So watering as a standard protocol, then, you're saying?
Yeah. As one protocol.
And that fencing request wouldn't matter. Okay, so what about another kind of phasing opportunity? You know, we're looking at a huge site and a lot of grading with a lot of homes around this project. And so do we have anything in our current mitigations that would call for some kind of phased grading and tree removals to give a chance then for wildlife to move without being completely displaced, and some kind of phase grading and removals for some kind of small protections for wildlife there on site, and to maybe minimize impacts from construction dust?
Commissioner Wired, Eric Hughes, current Eric Hughes of Planning and Building. We do have Emily Creel on the phone, our consultant, who can speak to this.
Okay, great. Thank you. Emily.
Yeah, hi, everyone. Thank you to the county for accommodating a virtual appearance for me. Eric mentioned, sorry, and Emily Creel, SDC Environmental Consultants. Eric mentioned the camp as a mitigation measure, the construction activity management plan, and this is the APCD's most commonly used tool to mitigate construction-related impacts during four projects of this size and nature. And what that camp will require is that each project component be phased so that dust, noise, and similar related impacts stay within acceptable thresholds for the APCD. So because we don't know exactly, for example, what's going to be graded when, the depth of excavation, the type of construction equipment that's going to be on site, all of those details will be figured out at a later date. But the number one tool of implementation of the camp is to do the phasing that you just described.
So I'm hearing you say that would be expected. Yes.
Yeah, it'll be a requirement of the APCD.
Okay, that it would be required, not just expected.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's good to hear, knowing that that airborne pollution is going to add to existing levels in the area and be problematic for a lot of people. Thank you. Switching tacks here, I just wondered on this about the reality of equestrian use on this site. We've had it proposed as an equestrian trail around the project. Maybe you could show the map, Cheryl, and we could see that. And there's talk of an equestrian staging area. And there's some question of how many horses and horse people are right around this site and going to use it. And so I guess my question really, what's the equestrian trail on this? Could you just sketch that out for us?
Yeah, so this is not our trails map. We could pull this up, it would take a second, but there is proposed to be an equestrian trail around the perimeter of the site, I believe, here, and then this way, up here, Two Willow Road is an easement. They're not proposed to develop it, but there is an easement. So it does go around part of the perimeter of the site.
Okay. So I'm, without needing to know exactly the route, it's just become a question how realistic it is as a destination for equestrians, and the question of whether that trail could be paved and used as a bike trail or multi-use trail that would allow kind of access for more users, including kids on bikes. So within our current allowance, would there be some flexibility for that to get paved as potentially a bike trail or something that would get more use if there weren't a lot of horse people bringing their trailers out and using it for horse trails?
Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. Just to make sure I understand the question, you know, the equestrian trails, if they were not used, is there some ability to repurpose those into, you know, a paved trail at some point? I'll be honest, I am not... I don't know all the ins and outs of the specific plan. Currently, it is an equestrian trail. I think if there was a change like something like that that was going to be requested, the applicant would come in, just like with any project, and ask for like a modification. So I would say it's possible in the future if that's where, you know, the project headed. But ultimately, it would, you know, be at the, you know, it would be the applicant or owner who owns the property to determine what to do, you know, at that point.
Okay, well, it's not a big one here. It just seems like that could be more of an amenity for residents, and a question of how much use this sort of unpaved trail would get and how that would preclude kind of biking on in sand. So I don't think it's something we're going to work out right here now.
Also, if I may, Eric, he's planning a building. We do have Miss Emily Creel as well online who can speak more to that.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Emily Creel, SWCA. I just wanted to add that we did work really extensively with County Parks on establishing this equestrian trail network. So if you still have the graphic up, I've got a delay on the video, so I can't see exactly what y'all are seeing, but it's the blue dotted line. So it's predominantly along the perimeter, but also goes through the site. And the easement up to Willow was because the Parks and Rec element has an equestrian trail planned along Willow Road. So it did meet some goals of the county's general plan. And I also wanted to point out that a lot of the internal roadways have bike paths, and I think every single roadway within the specific plan, except for the motor courts in neighborhood 3, have full sidewalks on both sides of the road. And so maybe David can speak a little more specifically to that, but the whole project has designed to be very bike friendly internally, which is not an exact substitute for, I think, what you're describing, which is a nice, you know, kind of paved bike path through the perimeter and the more wooded areas. But we have tried to provide for both uses, and even the red dotted trail is pedestrian. So all three types of non-motorized vehicle, you know, transportation we've tried to accommodate within the specific plan.
Thanks for that. That's helpful. It's not quite the same kind of pathways along roads as separated trails through parks and trees, but so noted. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have questions at this time, or I'm open to discussion?
I don't have any questions at this point. I know this is in your district, but I'd be happy to make a motion if you so choose.
Yeah, why don't we take a motion in a second, and or if see if there's a second, and then we'll just have a little discussion to see what happens.
Could I have the motion, recommended motion, put up on the screen, please? So I'd like to make a motion to find that the previously certified 2024 final environmental impact report adequate for the purpose of compliance with CEQA in accordance with the prepared addendum, and to approve LRP 2025-00004, amend 2025-00003 for amendments to the 2024 Dana Reserve Specific Plan, Conditional Use Permit, Vesting Tentative Track Map, Track 3159, and Development Agreement based on the findings listed in Attachment 1 and in accordance with the recommended modifications in Attachment 2.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Does anyone have discussion before we vote?
I do, yeah. Thank you. So noted. I'll be voting no on this motion, much for the same reasons that I voted no on the original proposal. I appreciate the efforts here all around. I feel like the system has failed us a bit, and we're plagued here with missed opportunity and a bit of magical thinking. Missed opportunity for meaningful, deed-restricted, affordable housing. That could have been required through a fair and comprehensive, clearly applied inclusionary housing ordinance of the type this county once had and many jurisdictions within the county still have. It's nice here that we're allocating, that we're entitling now 78 affordable housing units, thanks to Peoples and the school district and the applicant for the work on that. But these houses are entitled, but they're not paid for. And a back of the envelope calculation is that something like $50 to $60 million will still be needed from somewhere to build the affordable homes. The applicant has donated some land, but not built and paid for a single deed-restricted affordable home. The RENA numbers that Ms. Q showed us show our vast deficiency in very low-income homes. 7 of a need for 801 homes have been permitted since 2018 or 2019, whenever this RENA cycle started. 7 of 801. We're not doing too well there. 226 of 505 low-income homes. They're not just going to appear. People's Self-Help and Haslow and the other affordable housers, such as the one I run, Smart Share Housing, have thousands of affordable homes entitled, but we can't get the funding for them. It's tight and it doesn't grow on trees, and a lot of the trees here are gonna be knocked down anyway. So we have a high cost with something of 20 class one unmitigable impacts. The most impacts to the community that I've seen in any project in a lot of years of doing this and paying attention. It's a high community impact. And I think our community deserves at least some number of deed-restricted affordable homes out of this. I know it's a tricky one, who pays for what and who does what. It's not simple, but I don't think we're even close on this one. Not close at all. Along those lines, it's magical thinking to think these homes that are market rate are going to be affordable. We've seen that claim from developers all around that they'll be affordable. Look now at the projects that we hoped might be affordable, Avila Ranch, San Luis Ranch. The market rate homes are way more expensive than affordable. And so it's magical thinking those are just going to be that way. I think magical thinking even that this will necessarily pay for the services, because paying for this, the cost of services to these mostly luxury high-end homes that won't be affordable to moderate workforce or low-income residents, really rely on sales tax revenue and on TOT revenue from a proposed hotel. Those numbers aren't guaranteed. We see a lot of the current barn commercial complexes partially empty and not generating a lot of sales tax revenue or as much as hoped. So, really missed opportunity and magical thinking. So thanks to people for trying on this. I don't see anyone doing wrong and everyone trying, but I don't think our system is working. Thanks.
Okay, do we have other? Go ahead.
Thank you. No, I appreciate the efforts of the community, the efforts of the developer in coming to this amended agreement. Truly, it's a great conversation that was had. I appreciate people's self-help housing coming and sharing that there's 9,000 households on waiting lists to be able to live in the community. You know, it's just that this project's not going to solve the problem. It's incumbent upon all of us to accept the fact that the people we rely on to help us, our maintenance folks, restaurant workers, hotel workers, all those people, they need a place to live. And projects of this scope create an opportunity to give those folks a home. So I think we really need to start thinking about what we need as a community, whether a municipality or our county jurisdiction in the future. But I will be supporting the amended project. Thank you.
Okay, any other? Okay. Yeah, I'll just comment, and my comments are a reflection of my own feeling, not the supervisor who put me here, so please don't blame him. This was one time we don't quite see eye to eye. I will be voting yes on this project because we are in a housing crisis. And when we are in a crisis, we look for progress, not perfection. I'm beyond sad at the number of affordable units lost. I think this lawsuit was not about the environment. I drive by that area almost every day. Nobody's front yard is planted with the chaparral that they claim to value so much. I think it's about keeping people out of a neighborhood, and look at the numbers, it's about keeping poor people out of a neighborhood. And I'm sorry if my voice shakes at this, but I try to live by speak the truth, even when your voice shakes. And I just been thinking a lot about the young people who are going to be denied a start and denied a home because of the modifications made so that people may have to wait 3 minutes less at a traffic light. Because when you look at the modifications of units, it's not that many less people, but it's crucial to the people who are being cut out. I was an unhoused person for a period of time when I was a young person, and I can't even compare my experience to what people go through today because it was very temporary. But until you've brought all your stuff back and forth to work, I don't think you know what you're doing. So I'll be voting yes, but I'm not happy about it.
Just a quick comment, and I understand Ann's point of view, but I think the system did work in its, I don't agree with you saying it didn't work, because the applicant brought his application in, the community got to rebut and bring opposition. There was lawsuits, and then they got together and agreed on this amended plan, which, like Miriam said, she doesn't agree with the plan. It would probably be nicer to have more affordable housing, but that's the agreement that the two of them settled on. So I think the system did work. They got together and they figured out what would be best for him or for the developer and for the community in an amicable decision.
Okay. And just one last comment before we call for a vote. I don't know how much money is in the settlement. I really don't want to know. But I would say that it would be fair that a portion should go to people's self-help housing to help these units get built, or to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Full disclosure, I'm on the board, but that is just the only place I know that specifically serves Napomo. If there's another place you know of that serves the people of Napomo that will go unhoused because of these modifications, that would benefit your community, because there's nothing worse for the environment than people living in creek beds and living in fields. So that would just be a suggestion. But with that, I see no other microphones. Let's have a vote.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
No.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Oh, oops, that's me. Okay, so next up, we will just... Let's see. Thank you, everybody, for your work, honestly. And I do want to spotlight this, the staff, and one of the parts of this project even won an award. So I do want to highlight that and just thank everyone for all their work on this, a national award. So I will now entertain a motion to take all testimony and correspondence into the record.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye. Aye.
And I will entertain a motion to adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting, September 25th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.